Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for joining us and listening in. There's not much to say about the weather this week other than sunny days with clear skies at night, with temperatures during the day in the lower 90s and the nights dropping down to pleasant 70s and 60s. And now here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa news.
Those new laws Governor Reynolds signed into existence, a lawsuit against the governor by a former state official, and a rise in state traffic fatalities, all made big news around Iowa last week. For starters, the governor signed the bill into law that prohibits divisive concepts from diversity training in Iowa schools, public universities, and government agencies and groups. Among those divisive concepts that cannot be taught, the idea that one race or sex is superior to another race or sex, and that the United States and the state of Iowa are fundamentally or systematically racist or sexist. The governor said the new law works against the teaching of critical race theory, a decades-old theory that examines how the legacy of slavery continues to influence American society. The governor also signed several budget bills into law. One of them includes an additional $21 million for corrections budgets, including an extra $3 million for the Anamosa State Penitentiary. Another budget bill the governor signed allocates an additional $10 million to the state's Last Dollar Scholarship Program. And the governor said that when state lawmakers return to the Capitol for a special session later this summer, she expects their primary goal to be redistricting, rather than using the extra time to pass any lingering policy bills. The coronavirus delayed census data, leaving lawmakers unable to create new district maps in the spring. The governor made more news last week when she said she wanted an investigation into what happened when at least 19 unaccompanied children were transported on an overnight flight from California through Des Moines in April, then taken on buses somewhere out of state. The flight was chartered by the federal government and was said to have had nearly 100 unaccompanied migrant children on board. Also last week, word that former Iowa Department of Human Services Director Jerry Foxhoven is suing Governor Reynolds. He claims she and her staff fired him 2 years ago for questioning the legality of paying one of her aides with federal Medicaid money. Reynolds later said Foxhoven's dismissal was partly related to a scandal over patient deaths at the Glenwood Resource Center, a state facility that cares for Iowans with severe disabilities. Meanwhile, the coronavirus continued making news around the state last week. The death toll from the virus climbed slowly, approaching 6,100 in the state by yesterday. And the number of people infected with the virus around Iowa also went up, exceeding 403,000 by yesterday. The number of new daily cases was said to be down about 50% in the past 2 weeks. Deaths were down 41%, and hospitalizations fell 9%. At the same time, the number of vaccinations in Iowa dropped by one-third. Meanwhile, there was word that the state was no longer letting Iowans view their own vaccination records, or those of their children, online, after concerns that employers might look at them. The State Department of Public Health is limiting public access to the website, partly because of concerns that employers could use it to see if their workers have been vaccinated. There was also word that more than 700,000 Iowans were enrolled in some version of the Medicaid program last month. That's up by about 100,000 residents who were enrolled at the start of the coronavirus pandemic in March of last year. There was also word that two Iowa colleges had been sued for refunds by individuals claiming they did not receive proper educations during the coronavirus pandemic. One suit was filed against Wartburg College in Waverly. The other was filed against St. Ambrose University in Davenport. There was also word that the top administrator in the Republican-controlled Iowa Senate had threatened retribution against a GOP appointee who oversees workplace safety after inspectors said they would make public their concerns about coronavirus hazards at the Capitol. Secretary of the Senate Charlie Smithson was said to have criticized Iowa Labor Commissioner Rod Roberts for not knowing better and told inspectors at a meeting in April that senators would not forget. Meanwhile, the Iowa Department of Public Health launched a new ad campaign last week, a $2 million effort to encourage Iowans to get vaccinated against the coronavirus. The campaign includes videos on TV and digital platforms such as YouTube, Hulu, and TikTok. Advertisements for the vaccine will also appear on social media, radio, and billboards. In another story, word last week that traffic fatalities in Iowa had gone up last year, even as driving had gone down because of the coronavirus pandemic. The state saw a 12% reduction in traffic volume last year, which should have meant a drop in traffic fatalities. Instead, 337 people died on state roads last year, the highest total in 4 years. And those fatalities are increasing again this year. As of last Tuesday, 119 people had died in traffic crashes in Iowa this year, up 25% from the same period last year. Patrol Chief Nathan Falk said, in his words, "We are feeling the impact of poor driving behaviors." The state will look to strengthen its driver's license requirements. In another story, an Iowa man was sentenced to 10 years in prison after being accused of pulling down his coronavirus face mask outside a Des Moines store and spitting on a fellow customer while yelling, "If I have it, you have it." 42-year-old Shane Michael was accused of assaulting a customer outside the store, jabbing him in the eye, and spitting and coughing on him. A jury found Michael guilty of willful injury causing serious injury. In other news last week, word that the Des Moines Area Community College had welcomed students back in person last Wednesday after canceling classes for 3 days due to a data security incident. But online classes remained canceled after the community college had shut down parts of its network in response to the security incident. There was also a report that meat supplier JBS had paid an $11 million ransom in response to a cyber attack that led to the shutdown of its meat processing operation the week before. Some of the plants that were closed were in Iowa. In eastern Iowa, officials were looking for the source of an E. coli outbreak that had sickened several children in Maquoketa. At least 3 children were being treated at an Iowa City hospital after developing a complication caused by E. coli. Meanwhile, the State Department of Natural Resources confirmed that a drinking water advisory had been issued last week in the city of Minburn. This after a water main break in town. There was also word last week that the University of Iowa Hospital had received better ratings from the federal government than it did several years ago. The U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services conducts an annual assessment for more than 4,500 hospitals across the nation. 3 years ago, the University of Iowa Hospital had received 2 stars out of a possible 5. This time around, it's received 4 stars. Overall ratings are based on quality and performance in 5 areas, including mortality, safety and care, readmission, patient experience, and timely and effective care. In the nation's capital last week, a judge said he would review whether capital attack suspect Doug Jensen of Des Moines can be released from jail while he waits for trial. Jensen was arrested 3 days after the January 6th riot at the Capitol, which left 5 people dead. He faces 7 charges, including allegations he brought a folding knife into the Capitol. Also last week, a Des Moines police officer was placed on administrative leave after being arrested on a public intoxication charge. 45-year-old Matthew Hunter of Urbandale was arrested after he allegedly smelled of alcohol and was uncooperative with officers when he was arrested. Meanwhile, word last week that a judge had dismissed a fine against an Iowa nursing home for the sexual assault of a resident. The judge said the Northgate Care Center of Waukon in the northeast part of the state could not have foreseen that the attacker would go after a man rather than the women he had previously preyed upon. In West Des Moines last week, the city council approved a mixed-use development site plan that some Valley Junction residents have been opposing for months. They say it does not fit into the look of the neighborhood and will disrupt business parking. The development on 5th Street would contain retail or commercial space on the bottom floor and 2 levels of apartments above. In the northwest Iowa town of Orange City, word last week that some landlords and tenants are going to court to challenge the city's new rental registration and inspection ordinance. That new ordinance lets inspectors get a warrant to enter their homes without permission, even without evidence of ongoing code violations. Orange City has about 100 property owners who are renting out nearly 500 rental units. The city administrator said the purpose of the ordinance is to provide a safe and healthy environment for residents. Meanwhile, last week, a Texas manufacturer accused Mid-American Energy Services, which is based in Des Moines, of price gouging during the freeze in Texas in February. J&M Plastics filed a federal lawsuit alleging that Mid-American Energy Services illegally tacked on $54,000 in an April bill, about 3 times what J&M would pay in a normal month. Mid-American Energy Services provides electricity in unregulated markets. It is the sister company of Mid-American Energy, the regulated utility that serves much of Iowa. There was also word last week that Iowa State University President Wendy Winterstein is getting a $10,000 raise. Winterstein had been earning $590,000 a year, but when the University of Iowa's new president, Barbara Wilson, was hired, she received a base salary of $600,000. So the State Board of Regents upped Winterstein's pay to match Wilson's. And one more note from last week, word that former Republican Vice President Mike Pence would return to Des Moines this summer. Pence plans to address the Family Leadership Summit on July 16th. The Family Leader is a state conservative Christian group whose events are a frequent stop for Republicans who are thinking about running for president. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from around the state. I'm Dennis Hart, taking my leave now, but planning to return tonight live at 7 for KHOI's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will chew over what's been happening politically around Iowa in recent days. And then I'll make a return visit to the same virtual seat on Friday on Local Talk, when I'll report on what's been making news in Ames. I hope you can be here for all of it. Have a great week.
The Last Train Home by Pat Metheny. This is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thanks for listening. Starting July 21st, a virtual summer camp is being offered to 7th, 8th, and 9th graders called STEM Summer Camp. And this virtual camp is designed to help young people visualize and plan their futures and to try out ideas about possible careers and get a leg up in preparing their futures. It sounds very practical, and while providing education in the sciences and math, it introduces young people to career paths, I think primarily in transportation and technical and construction areas. But we'll find out more about that. Patricia Barr is with the Iowa National Summer Transportation Institute. She's in Iowa City at the University of Iowa Center for Excellence in Development Disabilities and is here to tell us about this program. Welcome to Local Talk. As I understand, you're trying to get the word out about this program so that young people who are interested in taking advantage of this can participate. Patricia, for starters, I'm still a little bit confused exactly myself about how this all fits together. Who exactly are the groups that are sponsoring this program and leading it? I've heard the University of Iowa mentioned the DOT and then the National Summer Transportation Institute. How do those all work together?
Thank you, Ursula, and thank you so much for having me here today. I'm really excited about this program that's starting next Monday. And this is something that we are doing, the University of Iowa is doing in collaboration with the Civil Rights Bureau of the Iowa Department of Transportation. We have a grant funded through the Federal Highway Administration. And so this is a program that's free to students that you mentioned entering 7th, 8th, and 9th grade statewide.
Who exactly are the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Transportation?
Yeah.
And then the University of Iowa Center for Excellence. What are these two organizations?
The Federal Highway Administration provides money to each state to provide summer transportation institutes because the transportation industry, people in the transportation industry are aging. And so they're wanting to get young people excited about all of the careers that can happen in the transportation industry. So they fund the Iowa Department of Transportation. And this grant goes under the Civil Rights Bureau because historically, this was something that they were trying to recruit minorities and people of color to be involved with. So let's see, Civil Rights Bureau of the DOT. And then I work at the University of Iowa, and part of the hospital is the University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. And we're the ones that are hosting this in collaboration with the Iowa DOT.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And what is the, what exactly is the Center for Excellence in Development Disabilities at the University of Iowa? What's that?
We're part of the Center for Disabilities and Development, which is a tertiary care center. We have a clinic and many grants to serve people with disabilities, all different types of disabilities of all ages throughout the state. So being a tertiary care center, we are someone that can serve people all over the state. And the USED, we're actually funded through the Administration on Community Living. And again, there's funding from the federal government to each state, and that comes to the USED through the Administration on Community Living. And then basically what this program is all about is something that my boss, Derek Willis, put together at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, and he ran it for 14 years. And he talks about it all the time. He's so excited about it. I wish he could be here today, but he's just he's got pictures of all these kids that went through this program, and he says, you know, well, this one's an engineer, and this one's a professor, and this one's a pilot, and they're doing all these wonderful things that he surveyed them. And they said it really started by getting a spark of interest through this summer camp. And this, you know, it was in Missouri where he did it, and now he's in Iowa. So he's been wanting to get this going in Iowa at the University of Iowa since he got here, like 3 years ago.
So this is the first summer that this is happening?
This is the first summer, and we, of course, wanted it to be in person, but this is a virtual camp, so people from all over the state can come and participate. And I've been talking to people for a few months about this program, and we've got people from trucking companies, some of the professors here at the University of Iowa about the advanced driving simulator. We've got people from the locks and dams on the Mississippi. We've got an air care pilot. we have civil engineers and from Iowa State that are going to be involved. So people from all over the state are involved in this program, and we hope that students will also be involved from all over the state. In addition to some of these folks telling about their jobs and their careers and what they do and what they like about their jobs and not, students will also learn about some of the post-secondary education options to them, kind of study skills that they need to learn about, and what you need to do to get into and go to and succeed in college.
So, yeah, it's a lot. And again, this is for 7th and 8th and 9th graders. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So what is the actual goal of this summer camp? If a parent is listening to this and thinking, why would my child want to do this? What are you planning for the children to get, or the young people to get out of this if they go? What's the overall kind of experience that they're looking for?
We want to fire up students to just look at different possibilities, to have some possibility thinking about their careers and their future. It could be engineering, it could be driving a truck, it could be driving a jet airplane. But we want them to get excited about different parts of transportation. It could be marketing, could be planning trips. Just there's so many, many jobs that have to do with the transportation industry.
So the theme is the transportation industry, right? That's kind of...
It is.
It's kind of introducing young people to careers in transportation.
You've got it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm starting to get it now.
Air, water, land, rail transportation. There's a lot of things that people can do. When Derek first told me about this, I was like, really? But then I started exploring all the different things that we could do and all the different ways that we can introduce this to students. And I'm just really excited about the program that we have together. We've hired a licensed teacher to be our lead facilitator for the program. And we have two engineering students that are going to help as well as myself. And we've just got a lot of fun stuff planned for this 2-week virtual summer STEM camp.
So you call it a camp. This is less like a classroom and more kind of like an adventure together or
an adventure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's not school.
It's not school. You're going to learn some stuff, but hopefully in a fun way.
And then, so for instance, you're going to have a pilot on who's going to talk about being a pilot. You're going to, and you're going to have, say, like a train engineer talking about being a train. Is that the type of thing that will happen?
Well, I don't know about a train engineer, but I've got somebody that's going to talk about rail transportation and kind of how it's expanding in Iowa. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of jobs in the rail industry. But I do have a pilot and an airplane pilot, and as well as a helicopter pilot on the docket. One of those pilots is a pilot for air care at the hospital. So you think, okay, transportation, medical, they kind of mesh in together.
And then is there going to be some way for the young people to evaluate whether they would want to be in that career? Is there some sort of exploration for them to discover their own interests?
Absolutely. There will be a little bit of work. You know, it's not going to be all fun and games.
Uh-huh.
They're going to look at the different careers. They could present on some of their different careers that they're interested in. But they're also going to be given some real life problems in the transportation industry and have them explore those and see if they can come up with some solutions. So, for example, one of them that we'll talk about are drones. So how high up should drones go? Where should they be able to take pictures? There's people's privacy in their backyards that we're going to talk about. So, you know, that's just one little piece that we'll talk about and have students explore and learn to do some research.
And then you also will be teaching them some of the kind of practical skills about applying to colleges or resume building or those type of things. What will you be doing in those areas?
Yeah, I don't have resume building on the docket, but that would be a good one.
Okay. Add that.
I've got some things about, as I mentioned, how do you do research? But there will be a virtual tour of campus, and we've got some people from admissions that will talk to students. I've also got somebody from Student Disability Services that's going to talk to them, and someone from our counseling department is going to talk about career exploration and creating career goals. So just lots of different people involved.
So describe the addition of people with disabilities that was brought to this program. Is that a new addition, or did this come up from the project from Kansas City?
It did come up from the project in Kansas City. So historically, this money has gone to historically Black colleges and universities. And when Derek started the program at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, he said, well, hey, you know, people with disabilities are needing jobs. They are underserved. They're underrepresented in this industry as well. So let's add them to this mix. So Derek was really the first person to add people with disabilities to this program throughout the United States. And it's become more prevalent throughout the United States because of Derek's work.
Now, does Derek say that there are actually young people who are really, really interested just in the topic of transportation?
Oh, absolutely. I wish he were here because he just gets so excited about it. He says, oh, yes, we've got, you know, this person that's a pilot. We've got this person that's a professor. We've got this person that's an engineer. He knows these students. He keeps in contact with them. And I hope that the students that come to this Summer Transportation Institute in Iowa will also be able to keep in contact with them and help to mentor them through this process of finding a career and, you know, finding something that they love to do.
Okay. This is an opportunity for that child or that young person who wants to know about highways and planes and...
Absolutely.
So give us a little bit the details. When does it start? On Monday?
Next Monday.
A week from today. And then it runs for how long?
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And is it every day during the week?
Every day from 10 till 12 and from 1 to 3, Monday through Friday for 2 weeks.
So for 2 weeks, it's pretty much the bulk of the day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it'll be online.
4 hours.
Yeah. So it'll be online. So it's something you can do from home. And how do you sign up for it if you want to do this?
People need to contact me. My name's Patty Bahr, B-A-H-R. You can email me, and my real name's Patricia, P-A-T-R-I-C-I-A-B-A-H-R at uiowa.edu. Or you can call my cell phone, and I'll get you an application. My cell phone number is 651-226-4603. Again, that's 651-226-4603. I'll send you an application. Give me a call. Email me right away. We'd love to have you come and join us.
Okay. Is there a website where somebody can go and find out more about this?
Because this is our first year, we don't have a website yet. Uh-huh. It is on the Iowa Compass Facebook page.
Well, okay, so go through the contact information slowly again, and we'll put it on our website as well.
Wonderful.
But go through it slowly, just in case somebody has been reaching for their pen.
okay.
Give us the email and the phone number to sign up.
The email is patricia-bahr at uiowa.edu. So that's PATRICIA-BAHR at UIOWA.EDU. Or my cell phone is 651-226-4603.
Okay, thank you. And again, we'll put that on our website today as well.
Wonderful.
In case you were listening and couldn't get that written down. Well, if you
were
listening
to Patty. I really appreciate this, Ursula.
Oh, absolutely, Patty. It sounds like a really fun thing for a particular type of young person, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's really an opportunity to get real life experience and also to learn something about the sciences and to think a little bit about the future, right? It sounds a little bit nerdy, which sounds like fun to me. I mean, it's kind of digging deeper into something. So it sounds like something somebody can really, I don't know, spend some time thinking about their just what they like, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Ursula, that to me is the best compliment because my background is engineering as well. And so when somebody says something is nerdy or that I'm a nerd, I'm like, well, thank you. That is a great compliment.
Well, you'd fit right in here in Ames for sure. Anyway, but I'm speaking with Patricia Barr, who's actually in Iowa City at the University of Iowa's National Summer Transportation Institute. I'm not sure. That's with the university there. Okay.
Yes.
And this is an opportunity for a young person in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade to, I guess, just learn a lot about who the people and jobs are between the planes and the trains and the highways. And we'll put the information on our website, too, if you want to find out about it. Patricia, thank you for joining us, and good luck. It's not really a pilot program because it's been tested in Kansas City, right?
So absolutely.
This is kind of an inaugural Iowa version of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I hope it goes well. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Ursula. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Take care, Patty.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Blackfoot with Highway Song, and this is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening. And we are kind of moving from the topic of mass transportation to the topic of mass communication. And Keith Morgan is here for his monthly check-in. Keith is the Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Thank you for coming back, Keith. And okay, so talk to us about mass communication. Explain what that is and what's happening.
Well, as emergency management, we've said it over and over again that the public is a very, very important part. In fact, they're the most important part of all of our disaster responses, both before, during, and after. And what the public does or doesn't do during a disaster can make that response much, much better. And emergency management wants to have direct communications to the public. It's great that we have great media outlets like this that we can talk to the public, but we're sharing it with other markets and with other issues. So there are times that we need to have quick and direct information communications with the public. And we do that through our webpage, and we have a Facebook page that people can access, and it's Story County Emergency Management on Facebook. Weather radios is another way. That one can be from the national level on down through. And finally, we have a mass notification system. And this mass notification system allows us to communicate directly with you via your cell phone, via email, to get you time-critical, very, very important information. So one of the features of our mass notification system is that the state, Homeland Security, actually has our contract and provides us this capability for free. And recently, they changed their vendor that provides this mass notification. And there's, quite frankly, there's good parts to this and there's bad parts to this. The good part to this is, whereas before it was all or nothing, we had to have everybody signed up for severe weather notifications and for all of them, we now have the ability through this new mass notification system for you, the user, to decide whether you want those storm alerts coming directly to your phone. And those storm alerts that we're going to be offering are the most critical ones: tornado warnings, tornado watches, severe thunderstorm warnings, severe thunderstorm watches, flood warnings watches, and flash flood warnings and watches. So you can decide.
And now we've added a new one too, right? Derecho.
Derecho is not one of them we're actually going to have on the selection on there. We kind of narrowed it on down to those that are the most important. And why we felt this was important, because some people may have alternative modes of getting this information. And it used to be that if we had a severe thunderstorm warning for the entire that it was for one part of the county, everybody would get notified. Now, by people going and registering, and this is the key part to it, is that they need to go to our website and register their cell phones. We're able to take all the landlines and put this information in there, and you'll get the basic notifications. But what is really nice about this new mass notification system is that you can optimize it for what you want. You may not want to get those alerts. It will also allow you, though, to get alerts for different communities. So, for instance, I live in Story City and work in Nevada. So I can get alerts by selecting, as I go and register, that I want alerts for Story City and also for Nevada. I can find out what's going on in both communities. You could select all the communities across all of the county if you wanted to.
And how does the alert show up? Does it show up as a text or a phone call, or what is the actual alert?
It'll actually be whatever will be all or just some of those. Typically, we'll use all of them. So, as you know, text, we're limited to 160 characters. So we might put in a text message that comes out to you is, for instance, there's been a chemical spill at Facility X. Go to our webpage for more information. And on our webpage, we'd have more information. The email might say exactly what we want you to do. We want you to evacuate to the east over to this town here, which we can't do. We can also put that same information into a voicemail or a voice message that comes out to you. So we'll optimize each of the messages for each of those ways that we can talk to you. Another good thing is if you put in your location that you're registering, your residence, If we draw a circle and want to contact people that are inside that circle, that address will select your phone to receive these kinds of messages. So it's very flexible and it's very customizable to the event that's going on so that we can really target those that need the information. The other thing is we won't use this system very often. You might get a test message very occasionally on it so that you remember that you have it and also so that we can test it. But we want to reserve this so that if you get one of those messages, you know that it's very, very important and that you need to pay attention to it. Because we recognize right now your phone is always blowing up with offering you extended warranties and college insurance pay downs and stuff like that. So we really, really want to optimize it. But the key is people need to go and register. And they can go to our website, www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA, which stands for Emergency Management Agency. And right at the top, there is it'll take you to our page where you can go in and sign up for it. Get your cell phone in there. Talk to your parents and talk to your kids. As a matter of fact, now one person can register the whole family so that you can make sure that your children are also getting this. And businesses, we encourage businesses to also sign up for this so that they get messages coming directly on into their offices, those warnings of weather and stuff like that, so that we can really make sure that everybody is informed and can take action to make sure that they're safe during a disaster.
So again, the place to sign up for this
is go to www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA, or just do a search for Story County Emergency Management. The good thing is there aren't too many Story counties across the nation, and it'll take you right to our website.
Now, a lot of the folks listening to KHOI are not in Story County. We mm-hmm. have people in other counties in central Iowa. Can they sign up for this, too, with the Story County website, or do they need to contact their disaster emergency management in their county?
They do need to contact their local emergency manager for those areas that are inside that county. If they do business inside of Story County and want to get this service, they're free to sign up and free to go ahead and access it.
But the service won't tell them about what's happening in, say, Boone or Marshall County.
There is another great feature. Our provider is called Rave, and if folks go in on what's called the Smart 911 app, when they sign up for that, if they are in any county that is using this service, and their location falls inside of what we call these circles or polygons where we're alerting folks, their app will actually alert them that something is going on in that area. So it's another great feature that's there.
And what's that called again?
It's called the Smart 911 app. Mm-hmm. So go download it. That is another way that they can sign up for these services. And another nice feature about this is they can put in information about themselves, special medical needs, so that we can get some sense of how many people might need specialized care during a disaster. And we can actually go onto a map and look at that information so that we can, again, determine how many folks might need a shelter because the power is out and their electrical assisted devices won't be powered. Mm-hmm. So a lot of power. I know my deputy, Melissa Spencer, has been spending quite a bit of time to make sure that this is optimized and works best for the folks here in Story County.
Are you getting people to sign up for it? Can you tell if people are signing up?
We are. We're starting to finally we just opened it up, and we've already had some folks starting to sign up for it, which is great. We're really going to make a push over the next couple of months. We're also going to send out a text, use the older system that we had, to let folks out there know to go back in, register again, to take advantage of all of these different parts to it. In September, which is National Preparedness Month, we're going to actually send out a test message across the system so we can test it and so that others that are using the system can understand what they can expect for messaging across the system.
So, again, the thing that's kind of more advanced about this than what you've been doing before is that it's more site-specific information. Is that primarily, or what is the improvement here beyond that?
The real improvement is for the user, because the user can really select what they want to get and what they don't want to get. And also the user can tell us information about them that will allow us to do responses. On our end of it, there are a few features that make it a little bit easier to use, some that are going to give us more capability, but is requiring us to educate ourselves on it. But it's really the user that gets the advantage out of this.
So it's more of an interactive service where the user is more actively participating in how they use it.
Customizing it.
Thank you.
I like to look at it that, yeah. Again, they can really narrow down what kind of information that they want to get. Uh-huh. But the other part to it is that, again, somebody that is that has a family, as opposed to each person having to go in and sign up, we can now sign up the whole family all at one time, making it easier, again, for the user to be informed about disaster information.
Uh-huh. And again, this is for tornadoes, floods,
severe weather, severe thunderstorms, and the two kinds of floods, you know, the flash floods, which we're having more and more of around here, or flooding like on the Skunk River and like that. So especially folks that would live near the Skunk River or Squaw Creek, or those that are areas impacted by flash flooding, that could be very important.
Okay. So it's floods, tornadoes, thunderstorms. Oh, my.
Yep. The top three out of our world of things that we have to deal with.
We're scared of here in Iowa.
Yeah.
When I was little, I was really afraid of a volcanic eruption. You don't have that on the app?
If that volcanic eruption, the classic Yellowstone eruption happens, we can use this to let you know what to do about that, too.
Okay. I'm not too worried about it anymore. I'm okay. But, okay, thank you, Keith. Anything else we need to know about this?
If you're already in our system, the key thing is to really optimize it, go back in and re-register. We understand that that's a little bit of work, but it's super easy. I call myself computer caveman, and I can use the system fairly easily, so everybody out there. But if somebody does have some difficulties or questions, give us a call, 515-382-7315. That's our office number, and one of us will try and walk you through it and help you get signed up so that you can have the information you're going to need during a disaster.
Okay, phone number one more time.
515-382-7315, and that's for Story County Emergency Management.
Okay, fantastic. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Last words?
Be safe out there. Make sure your weather radio is up and running. It gets tested once a week, Wednesday at 11 o'clock.
Because the thunderstorms, the floods, and the tornadoes are coming. Oh, my.
Sooner or later.
Always do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Me smile. It likes to twist my dials. It plays stuff that I like. There's people behind that mic, and those people are folks I know. I get to hear them on the radio. Some speak so musically. We're a community. We're a community filled up with life and art, sharing things truthfully. Speak up right from your heart. My radio don't get paid. It's a little bit renegade. My radio makes me cheer. I like to volunteer. My radio plays good sound. A nice old building here in town. My radio feels alive. And I call it KHOI. We're a community. We're quite diverse and patient. We're a community. And here's our radio station. My radio plays it cool. Its budget is minuscule. Sometimes it's cutting edge. My radio makes me pledge. I listen when I go walk, and I listen to local talk. My radio has no fear. It's just as beautiful as everyone here. We're a community filled up with life and art, sharing things truthfully. Speak up right from your heart. We're a community. We're quite diverse and patient. We're a community. And here's our radio station.
And that is Tom and Doug of the Tom and Doug Show here on KHOI with the KHOI Community Radio Anthem. Thank you, Mr. Gentile and Mr. Florek. Tom and Doug are going to be doing a fundraising and kind of just general celebration performance, too, here in Ames. If you're a Tom and Doug follower, you know that Tom actually, in his real life, is a professor at Princeton. He lives in New Jersey. But he does come to Ames once in a while, and he is coming here this week. And he will be doing a live concert with Doug. And it is going to be, they're calling it Bringing the Community Back Together. And it is from 7 to 9 on the 19th of June. So that's just coming right up. And it's going to be at the new bookstore on Main Street, 203 Main Street, Dog-Eared Books. And again, that's on June 19th, 7 to 9 p.m. And it's kind of a celebration of life and Tom and Doug being able to actually see each other in person again. But they are also making it a fundraiser for KHOI. So put that on your calendar. I've always told Tom he's like one of the few truly weird people that I know. He is truly weird in a way that's hard to be. So he's always lots of fun. Also, I just wanted to mention to you that we have another event coming up next month, which you may want to start planning for. If you are a member of KHOI, we're going to be having an evening with Mitch Jezerich via Zoom for members to speak with Mitch Jezerich. If you listen to Letters in Politics at 5 o'clock here on KHOI, you are aware that Mitch Jezerich is really one of the most fascinating and stellar community radio journalists around. And if you do not listen to Letter and Politics at 5 o'clock, give it a try. I think it'll knock you out. So Mitch is in Berkeley, California, and he comes to us via Pacifica Radio. But he has agreed to do a special evening together with KHOI members to talk about how he does his show and what he has learned from all these interviews that he's done. So that should be a lot of fun. And it's for KHOI members. And if you're not a KHOI member, no problem. Just become one. Just go to our website, khoifm.org, and you'll see the yellow donate button. It's such a deal. It's $60 a year. So if you are a member or you want to become a member, mark your calendar for July 29th, which is a Thursday evening. That's going to be a really fascinating night. Hope to see you there. It's going to be via Zoom. And we're actually going to share it together with another community radio station in Ithaca, New York. So not only do you get a chance to meet Mitch Jezerich, you also get to meet some community radio members in Ithaca, kind of extended family members. Okay, so those are two things that are coming up. The 19th is right around the corner, and the 29th of July, not of June, will be an evening with Mitch Jezerich. And you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' with Tom Richards and Al Harris. And thank you, Mr. Murphy, for engineering today. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.